in the family, and specifically service to widows, which is a topic I haven't heard preached on very much, and I'm really excited to talk about it. When you think of God, what do you think of? When you think of his attributes, when you think of his character, when you think of the things that mark the things he does, what do you think of? What kinds of things come to your mind when you think about that? You might think of God as, you know, God of love. You might think of God who destroys the enemies. You can think of a lot of things. And today we're going to talk about one of the marks of God is God is a defender of the widows. God is a servant of the widows. God loves widows. His disposition is to help the widows. And so that's what we're going to talk about. So the text is going to be 1 Timothy 5, verses 3 to 8. And you can turn there. It'll be on the screen. And I'll read it, and then we'll jump right into it. 1 Timothy 5, verse 3. This is Paul talking to Timothy, instructing him on how to shepherd the church. So, Timothy, honor widows who are truly widows. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. Command these things as well, so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So that's the text. He actually goes on to give more teaching on widows in verses 9 through, I think it's 16. We're just going to focus on 3 to 8 today. When you think of God, what do you think of? Do you think of God as a God who takes care of the widows? And so let me just share some texts from the Old Testament about God's disposition towards the widow. Deuteronomy 10:17. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, who is not partial and takes no bribe. He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow. That's who God is. Psalm 68:4, sing to God, sing praises to his name. Lift up a song to him who rides through the deserts. His name is the Lord. Exalt before him. Father of the fatherless and protector of the widows is God in his holy habitation. Psalm 146:9, Yahweh watches over the sojourners. He upholds the widow and the fatherless, but the way of the wicked he brings to ruin. Proverbs 15:25, Yahweh tears down the house of the proud, but he maintains the widow's boundaries. That's who God is. That's God's disposition towards the widow. This goes on in the Old Testament. Wicked people are described as not having that disposition towards the widow. Job 24:3, the wicked person takes the widow's ox for a pledge. Later in that same chapter, the wicked person does no good to the widow. Psalm 94:6, the wicked person kills the widow. Isaiah 10:2, the wicked person robs the widow. Jeremiah 7:6, the wicked person oppresses the widow. Okay, so the wicked person has a disposition completely different than God. And we see that in reference to the widow. And so, since that's God's disposition, he gives warnings in the Old Testament. Exodus 22, you shall not mistreat any widow or fatherless child. If you do mistreat them and they cry out to me, God says, I will surely hear their cry. My wrath will burn and I will kill you with the sword and your wives shall become widows and your children fatherless. It's the warning of God. Deuteronomy 27:19, cursed be anyone who perverts the justice due to the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. Isaiah 1:17, learn to do good, seek justice, correct oppression, bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's cause. Jeremiah 22, do no wrong or violence to the resident alien, the fatherless, and the widow. Zechariah 7:10, don't oppress the widow, the fatherless, the sojourner, or the poor. Let none of you devise evil against another in your heart. Some warnings from God about our disposition towards the widow. And on the other end, God promises blessing. Jeremiah 7, if you do not oppress the sojourner, the fatherless, or the widow, or shed innocent blood in this place, and if you do not go after other gods to your own harm, then I will let you dwell in this place, in the land that I gave of old to your fathers forever. It's a blessing that God promises. Jeremiah 22, do no wrong or violence to the resident alien, the fatherless, and the widow, or shed innocent blood in this place. For if you will indeed obey this word, then there shall enter into the gates of this house kings who sit on the throne of David, riding in chariots and on horses, they and their servants and this and their people. But if you do not obey these words, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that this house shall become a desolation. God is disposed towards helping the widow. The wicked are disposed otherwise. God promises blessings to those who follow him in this and warnings against those who don't. It's the Old Testament. Widows play a significant role in the book of Kings. They provide for Elijah, eventually leading to the deliverance of Israel. An entire book of the Bible is devoted to the story of two faithful widows and a man who cared for these two widows, the descendants of which led to David, Solomon, and Christ, of whom is the head of this gathering today. So this is the Old Testament, and what I've pulled from is not even half of what the Old Testament says about God's disposition towards the widow. Isn't that incredible? And beautiful. And with all that in mind, we come to the New Testament. Jesus says, beware of the scribes in Mark 12. They devour the widow's house. In Acts 6, the church appoints deacons because the widows were being neglected. In Luke 7, Jesus heals a widow's son. Jesus cites widows as positive examples of generosity and prayerfulness in Mark 12 and in Luke 18. You have the example of Anna, the widow, in Luke 2, which we'll look at a little later on. We can sum all of this up from James 1:27. Here's what James says. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this. So here's true religion, pure religion. This is what it is. To visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. How does that verse strike you? Does it seem insignificant? Does it seem odd? How does that strike you? So that's kind of an overview of kind of this biblical picture of God's disposition towards the widow. So that when we come to 1 Timothy 5, which is the most extensive New Testament teaching on it, it's not this random, out-of-the-blue thing. There's so much in the Bible about this. So we understand now the heart of Yahweh. And I want to point out that serving widows is a fundamental of being a Christian. And neglecting this is detrimental to the church, which is, yeah, it's great. The whole point of 1 Timothy, as we move into 1 Timothy now, is the main point of the letter is to guard against false teaching and heresy. It's the main point of the letter. So you could summarize the book like this. One way to guard against false doctrine and heresy is by taking care of the widows and your household. Which is, we might not think of it in those terms. So let me try to maybe say a little bit more about that. Beware of false doctrine. That's the whole point of 1 Timothy. Beware of false doctrine, Timothy. Don't let that creep into the church. Protect against it. And how I'm going to get you there is I'm going to teach you about how to care for widows, how you should think about that. The neglect of widows, if you were to neglect them, demonstrates priorities that you might have that are not in line with God. We've just seen God's disposition. Instead of taking care of your household, your own people, there would be an emphasis on either yourself or selfish desires or on things outside of your household, Whenever you are not living in step with God's will, your walls are down and you are prone to false teaching. Okay, so right living correlates with right doctrine. Wrong living will correlate to your vulnerability to false doctrine and heresies. Those two cannot be separated, and I think that's how you can put those together in this book. So, Timothy, beware of false doctrine and take care of widows and your household. And we're going to see here that everything we're going to say about widows can apply to how you care about your own household. All right, so keep that in mind as we talk a lot about widows, and then at the end I apply it to your household. And so that was a lot of introduction to now get into 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy 5, verse 3, honor widows who are truly widows. And then verse 4, he's going to start teaching on this. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. So in other words, Timothy, make sure the elders and the church are taking care for the widows. But here's a caveat, Timothy. If they have children or grandchildren that can take care of them, let them do it. Let them learn to do that first. Okay, that's his teaching to Timothy. A great example of this in my life is when my grandma had Alzheimer's for, I think, 10 years before she passed away. My aunt, my mom's sister, took her into her house and took care of her for those 10 years. So my grandma's daughter took care of my grandma. And so that's just an example I have in my life of kind of this idea. If you're a child or a grandchild, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household. Let them first learn to take care of their mom or their grandma. Timothy, don't do it for them. Don't do it for them. They need to learn this. They need to learn this. Learning godliness here is what it means to train yourself for godliness. So if you look at the chapter right before this, 1 Timothy 4:7, train yourself for godliness. You guys know the verse. For while bodily training is of some value, you know, it's good to lift weights, godliness is of value in every way. It holds better promises. That's the idea. So let the grandchildren learn this first. So don't do it for them. They need to learn this. They need to train. They need to learn this. It takes teaching. It takes practice. It can be hard to take care of someone. It takes time. It's inconvenient. It takes sacrifice. And so this is something that needs to be learned. And so Paul encourages Timothy, don't do this for them. And he gives two reasons why he shouldn't do it for them. The number one, look at verse 4. Let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents. The first reason that children or grandchildren should do this first is because they have been invested in by their mom or grandma, right? From pregnancy to adulthood, the mom, the grandma has invested in them. And when someone pours their life into you, there should be a thankfulness, an acknowledgement, and a desire to share that in return to them. You don't want to be an ungrateful person, right? Someone who just feels entitled. We don't want to be like that. She's my mom. She has to take care of me. That's just how it is. That's what moms do, you know? Let it keep coming. I'm entitled to this. There's a pride and ungratefulness in that kind of attitude. Rather, there should be a natural gratefulness, acknowledgement of those who have invested in you. And so that's the first reason why the church should let the children and grandchildren learn to take care of their moms and grandmas. Number two, the second reason, in verse 4, at the very end, this is pleasing in the sight of God. This is pleasing in the sight of God. We've just seen God's disposition in the Old Testament and the New Testament, and so it's pleasing in the sight of God. God loves godliness, And when you embody, live out the heart of God in your life, it pleases God. It pleases God. What a great motivation for godliness, to please God. This goes to what Colin said last week. Your devotion to God will affect others. Colin's whole lesson last week kind of gets on this. Our number one priority and desire is to please God, to have devotion to God. And if you're devoted in God, to God, it will show in how you serve your household. And this is what distinguishes Christian morality from general human morality. Christian morality goes beyond being nice, being kind, being doing the right thing. It leaps beyond all of that, includes all of that, to pleasing God. That's Christian morality. Jonathan Edwards says this. He's talking about what is true virtue. He says, love to God is most essential to true virtue. And that no benevolence, no kind thing you do whatsoever to other beings can be of the nature of virtue without the love of God. If the love of God isn't there, it's not true virtue. It's a form of virtue, I think, but it's a lesser form of virtue. It's not ultimate virtue. It's not true virtue. Love of God is most essential to true virtue. Is that how expansive your heart is when you do acts of kindness? Is your heart that expansive, or is it only expansive enough to make you feel good about what you've just done? Is it only that expansive, or is your heart expansive enough to go, I'm doing this to please God? This goes beyond me. This goes beyond this, what's right in front of me, to pleasing God. This is the motivation of a Christian. Right? The end of verse 4. For this is pleasing in the sight of God. Serve the widow in your household, in your church. Serve your household, for this pleases God. That's a motivation for Christians. Another point in this passage that I thought of is that those in the congregation shouldn't pass off their Christian duties to the elders or pastors of the church. Right? Paul's telling Timothy, let them learn first to do it. Pastors are to help serve, feed, protect, but not at the expense of the church exercising their Christian duties or responsibilities or their participation in the body of Christ. Elders and pastors, their job is to equip us, to equip the congregation, to act out our duties and responsibilities in Christian living. And we shouldn't pass those on to the leadership when it's in our realm of responsibility to participate. That's just a small application point here. So, Timothy, take care of the widows in your congregation that are truly widows. But if they have children or grandchildren, let them learn it first. That's the argument so far, which leads us to verse 5. And verse 5, he's going to teach us who is truly a widow. So if you look at verse 3, it's honor widows who are truly widows. What does that truly mean? What's he talking about there? Well, in verse 5, he's going to unpack. This is what truly a widow is, and he's going to give three things. And I think the idea here is you can't help everybody. There needs to be some parameters, and here are the parameters for the church of serving widows. And he's going to list three. Number one, in verse 5, she who is truly a widow left all alone. I think that implies, left all alone, that there isn't the children, grandchildren category, maybe. Whatever that might be. Maybe not at all. Maybe they're not there in proximity. Maybe they're not capable of being served by them. We're kind of left to fill in those blanks with our context. But the idea is that the widow is actually left alone. They don't have help, right? So that's the first kind of qualification for who Paul wants, what widows Paul wants Timothy to help. Number two, the widow hopes in God. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God. Those are the types of widows you're going to serve in the church, Timothy. I think this just refers to a woman of faith. She's part of the body of Christ. Her hope is in God, and it's known and demonstrated. And so that's number two. And I think of Ruth in this one. When she goes with Naomi, she goes, your people will be my people. Your God, my God. I think that's an example of Ruth putting her hope in God. Number three, this widow prays like a Christian. She's left all alone. She's set her hope on God, and she continues in supplications and prayers night and day. She prays like a Christian. Her faith is demonstrated in Christian prayerfulness. She's dedicated to prayer. And if you look at Luke 2:36, I think Anna is the example of this that we see. I can read it for you. Luke 2:36-39. And there was a prophetess Anna, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was advanced in years, having lived with her husband 7 years from when she was a virgin, and then as a widow until she was 84. And here's the description of her. She did not depart from the temple, worshiping with fasting and prayer night and day. And coming up at that very hour, she began to give thanks to God and to speak of him to all who were waiting for the redemption of Jerusalem. So I think there you have an example of what Paul's talking about here. A widow is one who continues in supplications and prayer night and day. She prays like a Christian, right? So she's left all alone. She hopes in God, and she prays like a Christian. These are the parameters that God gives Timothy. If these things apply, Timothy, then you, and by extension the church, should honor these widows and take care of them. Make sure you do that. It pleases God. God is disposed this way. This is how you should operate in the church. And then we move to verse 6. And it's going to give the contrast. So here's what a true widow is, and here's what she isn't. Verse 6, she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. And it's hard to know exactly what is meant here, because, we don't know exactly what Paul means in context, but we can at least come up with a few options. Whatever he's referring to by self-indulgent, we know that this is in contrast to hoping in God and Christian prayerfulness. We know that, right? So a widow truly is this and not this. So it's contrasting the two. So whatever self-indulgence specifically refers to, we know it's what it's contrasting in the last verse. The NIV puts it, lives for pleasure. So in contrast, this is a widow that lives for pleasure. And it could refer to a type of luxurious living. That's how James 5:5 kind of uses this verse. Or it could have some sexual connotation, as we see in five verses later in 1 Timothy 5:11. Or it could mean a widow who maybe is just using the church to get what she wants. She kind of knows the church is going to help, and so she kind of gets her way in to get all the things she wants. And in this case, the verse is giving the church a sort of guideline for how to navigate these types of scenarios. But again, the contrast is between a woman who hopes in God and a woman who lives for self-indulgence, for herself. So there's the contrast. The church is to focus on this woman over here. And I think this is a good passage in favor of church membership, right? Paul's giving Timothy guidelines to who the church is responsible for. And one of the way the church today applies passages like this is by having church membership. Like, we're identifying who are the ones that fall under our responsibility, and who, if we don't take care of, it's actually a reproach on us, and a condemnation on us, and a blight on the church. And so I think this is a passage that is in favor of the idea of church membership. So just a side note there. And then we move on to 7 and 8. These are the last two verses. Timothy, command these things as well, so that they may be without reproach. That they may be without reproach. And then in verse 8, it gets stronger. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So here's our warning to the church. Care for the widows. Care for your household so that you may be without reproach. and so that, and if you don't do this, you deny the faith. You're worse than an unbeliever. The idea is, if you have children that don't take care of their widowed moms or grandmas, that's a reproach. And if you have widows in the church who love God and pray, and they don't have anyone to care for them in the church, that's a reproach. And it's worse than an unbeliever. Because I think unbelievers even know, by nature, to take care of widows, right? And let me give you an example. I don't know if Abraham Lincoln was saved, but he gave this in his second inaugural address, and he gave it to the country. Lots of pagans in the country, I'm assuming. And he thought they would be on board with this. So Abraham Lincoln says, you know, let us strive to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow. And everyone in the country is going to go, yup, that's what you should do. I listened to a Navy SEAL podcast, and they talk about, like, when a SEAL dies, they have a whole system. They know exactly what the woman needs. And so they have a whole system where they go and they get the things that she needs, and they all go over there together, and everyone knows the process. They know how to care for that widow intentionally in that time. They've done it over and over again. So this isn't, you know, the world knows how to do this. The world gets this. You take care of the widow. And so how much more the believer, right? And on top of this, on top of just nature, we have the example of Jesus. That's where the series started. We have the example of Jesus. On top of that, you have the power of the Spirit. And to deny these is to deny the faith and to bring reproach on ourselves. Yeah. It actually pleases God to send Jesus to serve humanity. It pleased God to send Jesus to serve us. And so to neglect that service is to deny a fundamental of our faith in a God who has served and brought salvation and brought glory to his name through that. And it's a fundamental of the faith. And so if there's a neglect of this, it kind of shows that if someone hasn't really grasped, hasn't really felt the essentials of the Christian faith. And so that's why I titled this something like serving widows as a fundamental of Christianity. It's just what we're going to do. Lacking this is a reproach, and that's the warning. We also see in verse 8, as we start to close up here, that this extends from widows to your own household. And that makes sense, right? It wouldn't make sense to say, okay, I'm responsible for my widowed mom, but if there's someone else in my household that needs care, I'm not going to help them. That wouldn't follow, right? So the principle is care for your household, and then he's teaching here specifically on widows. And so the principle is expanded. I think the idea is that households have a holy responsibility of caring for each other. And so I have three kind of principles in my mind that I go by. Family carries responsibility. Spiritual family carries responsibility. And proximity, in general, carries with it some responsibility. So for example, you can't serve everyone in the world, right? You know, there's things going on overseas that maybe I'll help with if the circumstance is right, but I just can't serve everyone. So rather, I think the idea is those who are in proximity, the weight of responsibility kind of amps up then. So you have household, you have your spiritual family, and just general, like we can go to the rescue mission, right? We can go there right now. So I think that's kind of the idea here. No one is closer to us or has invested in us more than our families. And so I'm just going to conclude with several just brainstorming application for serving your household. And hopefully by now it's built up like, okay, this is fundamental of following God. right? Number one, parents, invest in your children. Invest in your children. The idea in verse 4 is they're going to make returns to you, which means you've been doing something for a long time. And so invest in your children. And I don't know exactly what that looks like. I can give thoughts like invest in them spiritually. This is what Colin was getting at. They need to know the scriptures. Talk about God in small ways. Have devotions. Do catechisms. Talk about God. Love God. Sing to God. Protect them from letting sin permeate your house through movies, music, friends, and so on. Invest in your children spiritually. Train up your child in the way he should go. When he's old, he won't depart from it. Invest in their well-being in general. Don't satisfy, I mean, you guys know this, every desire of your children. Discipline them. Train them. Teach them to think, to read, to write. Teach them to laugh, to sing, to apologize, to respect elders. Invest, train, and care for your children. And children of all ages, take the idea of autonomy, of individualism, of you have no commitments. You are not tied to anybody. You are free to fly, to go anywhere. Take that idea and just punt it to the dark side of the moon. Launch it there. You're not your own. You have ties. We all have ties. Number one, you're God's. Right? You're tied to God. He made you. He made you. He created you. He owns you. Second, you have parents from God who are commanded to take care of you, to serve you, to love you. They've sacrificed their lives to train and invest in you. And the natural response is going to be take care of them when you have an opportunity. And if you're young, the best way you can do that now is to obey your parents. Like Paul says in Ephesians, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother. That's a great way to show your parents that you're tied to them. You're tied to them, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing that you're not on your own floating around free, soaring through the ocean to new lands all by yourself. That's number two. Number three, see your household as a primary responsibility of your life. Primary responsibility of your life. Fathers, succeed in taking care of your home before you succeed in your work. Mothers, succeed in taking care of your home before you succeed in, I don't know what mothers want to succeed in, social standing, maybe. Something with Facebook. I don't know. Children, succeed in your family before you succeed with your friends. Yeah. I think there's a big emphasis on wanting to be influencers and change the world and do big things and go far places. And I just want to lift up the virtue of your proximity and who God has put in your life. Learn to show godliness. Learn to show godliness to your family. Is your family an afterthought? Is serving your family mundane? Does it feel insignificant? Flip that. Show godliness to your household. It pleases God. It pleases God. I have no doubt that a lot of you, in conclusion, are applying this passage already in your lives. There's a lot of suffering going on in your families. I hear of them. I'm experiencing them. And obeying this is costly and hard. And so in conclusion, brothers and sisters, if this is hard, I just want to encourage you that God is pleased with you. God is pleased with you. Continue steadfast, and may he give you the grace to persevere. Take care of the widows. Take care of your household. Take care of your church. Jesus is on the cross, and John records this, quote, "But standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And Jesus saw his mother, and he saw the disciple whom he loved standing nearby. And he said to his mother, 'Woman, behold your son.' And he said to the disciple, 'Behold your mother.' And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home." One of Jesus' last acts of service involved caring for his widowed mother. Your labor for your mom, your grandma, and your household is not in vain, and it pleases God. Remain steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for it pleases him. Oh, Father, give us grace to do this, to act this, to learn this. It's hard. It's inconvenient. And we need your help. Thank you for the example we have in Jesus. Thank you for the example or the description of you that we have in the Bible and your disposition towards the widow. We praise you, Father. Thank you for your word. And give us strength. I ask this in your name. Amen.
Go ahead and stand, and we'll sing our final song here this morning. And